All right, we are going to go ahead and call our work session to order. It is Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. The time is 6:10 p.m. and we are meeting in the Surplus Community Center. The only item we have today is notice items on agenda for regular council meeting. Mr. Goodman and Mr. Bayer, do you guys want to start with that item or do you want to wait till Corey is here?
It'd be better to wait till Corey's here. I think you can clear up the rest of them easy.
Sounds good. So, Mr. Goodman, is there anything on the agenda that you would like to specifically discuss in the session?
Other than the Cedar Canyon items, is there anything you would like to add? I have a few things. There's a number of items, so.
Council, do you have any questions on the agenda items you'd like to discuss during the session?
If not, we can say that we're going to go through them.
I just had a question about the sign.
Yeah.
Oh. So Cedar Ridge is asking for this sign. Deerfield hasn't asked.
Deerfield is not asking. I imagine that at some point they will be asking. This kind of seems like it's the route that schools are going to do the digital marquee sign. So the code, let's just start there.
Okay.
So this is item number 14. It's a review action ordinance amending Title 10, Chapter 5.6 related to signs in public facilities zone. Both Deerfield and Cedar Ridge Elementaries are located in the public facilities zone. You had the opportunity to notice Cedar Ridge's marquee sign. They have one of those old fashioned ones where they put each individual letter up and slide it into its casing there. Time and vandalism have pretty much destroyed their marquee. They have all the space, but right now I think all of what's on there is Reg, Kid, Now, because that's all the space that works.
Aww.
So, anyway. What they're asking for is a digital marquee sign, and we went through this with the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission gave their recommendation. Right now, the proposed code change would include Section E, which would be signs in public facilities on this new section of code under the current code that regulates signs. But it just says that the signs in the public facility zone would be subject to certain limitations such as setbacks. In this case, where they want to have the existing columns, they want to remove the current sign and put in a digital marquee so they're not going any higher, they're not going any wider. Mm-hmm. Now, those columns are plumbed already for electricity, so they would just have to, it's really kind of a plug and play, really easy for them to do. So really the biggest issue we would have with a digital marquee sign would be lighting at night. If you remember a few years ago when we were discussing the Cedar Hills community sign here on Canyon Road, a lot of the neighbors across the way were concerned with how bright it would be at night, and staff at the same time wanted a digital marquee sign, and that should be sound like a gov sign, and it works fine. But so this code is only for schools in the public facilities. That was something the Planning Commission wanted to recommend. They don't want to see the city put in digital marquees in their parks right now. But what it does is it does regulate how bright it can be. It regulates when those when it can be lit, and it also allows for the use of public service announcements like voting today would be something that you can see on the site. So it'd be something that the city could work with the school and say, hey, we have this coming up. We'd like you to put it on your school. And with that sign, it faces east west, so there's no homes that it shines into. So I don't see that being an issue.
There's a sign on the building. Both of the schools have those slot signs on the building too. When you look at it, and maybe that's the next step. Is that something that would be allowed to shine through the post office? But it's a lot smaller.
It's really small. We've never ever had a complaint on them.
Okay.
And I don't imagine that we would have a complaint on these either. I've seen some pretty bright ones. Pleasantville High School, for instance, has one that's in a darker neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And a dark night, they put pictures up and it can get pretty bright, it can get pretty in your face. So we want to make sure that they're not doing those types of things after a certain hour.
Okay.
So we work with them on regulating that and keeping the partners.
So right now we don't allow signs in the flip, so we're zoning at all. Other than
like your city sign, like Welcome to Heritage Park sign, yeah.
So in the new ordinance, it doesn't really talk about who can put signs in the public facilities
other than
the school marquee.
That would still be regulated by the general provisions of the sign ordinance, which look at. Because we do allow for, if you're standing by your sign, you can have a sign in public facilities. But what we wanted to do is not allow for a free-for-all for political signs. It's kind of a stark difference between Highland and City of Brooklyn. We just, like in policy, we don't allow political signs on city property. And whereas Highland drive-through, which is, you know, signs every 10 feet. So yeah, we have a pretty strict sign policy, but if it's under private property, as long as it's off the sidewalk, we're okay with it. But this does not change any of those limitations.
Okay. And then the only other thing that I can think of is on that one where it says that the exception was public service announcements. I don't know if you want to define what you mean by that. So that's pretty broad.
It is pretty broad. How would you define it?
Well, we can look at other city codes, get data, or something. I talk to principal, I don't know who last name now.
Colton.
Yeah.
Yes. To really narrow down what she's thinking of when she says political service announcements. I just know that one of the concerns was that businesses or people would be using it to advertise.
Okay, that's a good point. She's going to be here tonight. That might be a good question for her. It's going to be a school policy as well.
But I think she said the district had very strict policies.
I would imagine that it could be used for commercial for-profit enterprise.
Right, that's a good question.
That would be shocking how that's foolish for all that.
Okay. Council, does anyone else have questions on the sign ordinance that's being proposed?
No.
All right, then if not, let's go ahead and move to a discussion on the Cedar County subdivision.
If it's okay, I'm going to talk about 16, 17, and 18, almost as if it's one. The notice is three separate items, but it's really kind of all interrelated. 16 is the creation of the PD, Plan Development 1 Zone. 17 is the rezoning of a certain portion of the city into the PD 1 Zone. And then 18 is the preliminary approval for the Cedar Canyon PD 1 subdivision. Real brief history, I think that you're all pretty much up to speed on this. This is part of the settlement agreement between the city as well and Cedar Hills Farmland LLC. This is the subdivision we have up here. I brought my Cory. If it works.
There you go. Ooh, it's a green one too.
Green one, yeah. Fancy. So the plan development one zone, it's set up to be very similar in structure to all of the code language I'm speaking of right now. It's set up to be very similar in nature to all of the other cities' codes. It follows the same format, it covers the same things. I would say that the one glaring difference is in section 9 of it, it references a development agreement. That would be the one section that's not found in any other code that we have, or zoning code that we have, just given that this is tied to a zone specific development agreement between the city and Cedar Hills Farmland. And the reason I feel that's important is because we want to narrow who can apply for a PD1 zone. This isn't open for the farmer down the street says, I have 12 acres, I'd like to subdivide in this same manner. Circumstances are different. These other residents do not get to be grandfathered into this zone. This is restricted to this one subdivision. It seemed like in looking at it, many other cities are working on adopting these types of plan development type zones. Sandy, Orem, Aaron Fork, Highland has it. They're fairly common now, but it outlines a specific plan for the development. Have you had any chances to go through the proposed code? Mm-hmm. What questions do you have that I can answer?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. You discussed it at length, so.
Okay. I think the one thing that for me is still maybe outstanding and just needs maybe some discussion clarification would be on the sign setbacks. Right now, it says interior lawn.
Is this in the preliminary plans or in the?
This is under section item 16. And it is, it's in the proposed code for the zone. And I'm talking 10-4C-6. The settlement agreement states that site setbacks should be 5 feet and that they, it says 10 feet combined, which would indicate there's some flexibility that you could have 4 feet on one side, 6 on the other, 2 feet on one side, 8 on the other. I guess the issue that you could run into is if the homes are built too close together, where you have 2 feet apart, 1 foot on one side, 9 feet on the other, you'd get some pretty narrow lanes there. And I'm just curious if we could establish a minimum on one side.
Do we know if fire code addresses that?
If it's within a certain amount of time, it's got to be fire rated. I know that, so all these buildings would be fire rated, just given their proximity to one to another. But past that, I don't believe so. We've talked a little bit about it. Chief Thompson addressed this, and I guess it's from the Planning Commission, in that this is kind of a separate issue related to fire, in that the narrowness of the lanes and the location of the fire hydrants would necessitate some additional fire hydrants, just because you're in the fall zone or the collapse zone or some of these structures are being too far away from a fire hydrant. So yeah, we brought that up at the Planning Commission meeting and we expect to see a few fire hydrants. So I don't think that's an issue. But the proximity of the buildings one to another, I don't believe is an issue, given that they're all going to be fire rated anyway per building.
But do you want a house 2 feet from its fence? I mean,
well, and this goes back to, I think Mike Geddes said it a long time ago when we were discussing the preliminary plans for the conceptual plans for this, and that you see some subdivisions where the homes actually touch on one, while the wall, they touch on one end and open up on the other side, so you can have build right on the property line and you have 10 feet up there.
These aren't doing that right now,
but it's just, given the proximity of one house to another, is there a minimum step back that we want to see, like, okay, you can go 3 feet on one side, you have 7 on the other side, obviously.
Three feet was the exact number that we were just going to suggest.
3 feet?
Yeah, we would be happy with having a minimum of 3 feet.
Okay.
Combined 10 minimum.
But always a 10.
Always a 10.
Combined 10 minimum 3 on either side.
So when you have a home that's at 3 on one side, does that mean the next one has to be at least 7 the other way?
Yep.
Okay. We can work that into the language there. I guess one of my concerns was just, sounds stupid, but we've run into this problem before, getting a lawnmower with a backyard. That's a problem we've had in
the
past.
By definition, the other side would, you couldn't have three on both sides.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That was my one concern I had outstanding.
You brought up a number of items in Planning Commission meeting. Have those been addressed?
I think so. Yeah. I can go over some of those. There are some of the languages, like it says, that the streets would be designed per city standards, but that's how the street is constructed, not the street profile. That was a clarifying point I asked for last time. There's some minimum height requirements. For some reason, our code allows buildings to be built at a minimum height of 8 feet. I don't know if that's even possible. So there's probably an interesting application story behind that one. But we say 15 feet here. That's still pretty small. I think you can go up higher than that. Probably it's 20. But no, past that, I don't have any real concerns with this, the language in this zone.
Council, any questions or comments on the creation of the
No, my only regret is that nobody is going to live on Lily Lane. It's the cutest name. And the houses don't face Lily Lane. Are there those two houses?
Switch. You know what? We actually have to rename one of these streets Wildflower Lane. We already have Wildflower.
Oh.
Okay, so it's now Lily.
Wildflower has become Lily.
All right, I'm fine.
I'm just going to be the first home purchaser.
Live on Lily Lane.
I like to name whatever my kids, actually.
Oh, what are their, well, come on, Kyle.
I'm sorry, I'm not all that old, I'm scared.
But I'm not gonna go too much into the engineering tonight. But needless to say, it has gone through the rounds with the city's engineers, Gordon Collins. Oh, I'm skipping the result.
Yeah, but that's easy.
That's easy, yeah, we have the map.
If you like the zoning, zone it.
Yes, the zone, we have two maps in your packet, not only showing the old zoning map, but it's this piece right here. It's reflected in the new legend as Planville 1, it's blue out. But that's what it's gonna look like on the new zoning map. And going back to the actual subdivision, part of the reason, and I know you're aware of this, but I'm just gonna state it out loud for everyone to understand, is that part of the reason that we're trying to accelerate this so that we get this done for the July 31st deadline is that part of the settlement agreement between the city and the Cyril's Farmland is if we get this approved, if we get this subdivision approved by July 31st, they will build this 4700 West Road all the way to the property line. If we don't, they build it to the intersection, and the city has to front the improvement costs for this remaining road, as well as fence that need to be put in by the city. They agreed to do a cement fence per the city's commercial standards where along this portion of 4700.
When is the planning commission meeting to your final plans?
July 10th.
So beyond July?
Yeah. So July 10th, that'll have a public hearing that will go out next week. Colleen and I talked about that today. Then we'll have this final approval on July 17th, and if we need to schedule a special meeting after that for any reason, we have about 2 weeks to do so. Thank you.
Council, any questions on that timeline or the reason? I think this accomplishes Chandler's goal of getting some blue on that zoning map.
We're going to have to make wide.
All right, so then the preliminary plans.
Yeah. Grab my preliminary plans. We've sent this to Bowen Collins, and they've done a number of, they've provided a number of red lines for us, and they've already been updated from that meeting, so a lot of the concerns that we had at planning commission I'm not going to bring up tonight because they've been addressed, and so we're taking those new plans, and we're still waiting for the Bowen Collins red lines on those as well, so we're going to get those probably within the next couple of days, I would assume. And then when we have those red lines, we'll submit those back to the developers for incorporation in their plans, and then by July 10th, planning commission meeting, they get their final approval. I'm hoping to have a fairly clean set of plans that both the city and the developer can stand on. But the items that we brought up with, the planning commission was a few of the major things was the size of this retention basin, and if you follow the email chains that were going back and forth last month regarding the city's sale of their 9 acres and this retention basin, you probably know that went through a number of iterations before we finally settled on what the current layout looks like, which we settled on about a half an acre. The reason we settled on a half an acre rather than a quarter acre was that a quarter acre retention basin really was going to be a pit in the commercial zone. Whereas where we limited it to half an acre, it made it a little bit more shallow, but we're going to be working with these developers, as well as the Openshaw group on trying to push that to be more of a grass field play area, as well as a retention basin, so it kind of can double as both. That was a major issue. Another major issue we had was the elevation points. It seemed that the engineers for this piece down the city's 9 acres and the smart piece were pulling their elevation points from two different locations. I think that that's been worked out. My understanding that Mark reached out to design engineering, that's been
I think so.
So I guess, given the timing of this project as well as we're going to start working with the preliminary plans on the open shop piece down here, we want those to seamlessly connect at some point and don't want to run into any hiccups. So part of that is that we need this road at the property line to terminate at grade level so that when Charlie Open Shop's group are coming in and putting in their improvements, they can easily tie it and it's not a raised road. So we brought that up with them as well. We talked about where the fence location was going to be for snow plowing. We talked about identifying certain easements need to be shown, and I believe that they've done all of that. So, like I said, many of the engineering issues that were brought up before the Planning Commission have already been addressed, and so they're not something that needs to come before the council at some point. As you had a chance to look at these plans, are there any issues that you guys may have foreseen or any concerns that you may have?
Besides the delay.
I was the only one.
Questions or comments?
And it's still going to go through some more engineering here, so we need to see what we'll catch. Corey, is there anything I'm missing?
Like Mayor said, it's kind of like gone over.
Yeah, so this has had about 100% eyes on it. So there's not, I don't think there's any surprises on this.
The only thing you're missing is that we always want to thank. We want to say we thank the staff for their hard work on this, and thank the council for your hard work on it. We're looking forward to moving forward with this project, getting this long problem solved, and getting you 80 houses worth of new residents.
Thank you.
I think we talk about just. Got a minute. I'll talk about the actual design of the homes. Is that they will have three elements on the front. Vinyl is not allowed. And then they'll have to have two architectural elements on every other side. So they should be visually appealing homes. We're not talking small roofs, but vinyl homes. These should be fairly nice homes given the requirements that the CCNRs have. The CCNRs have that development agreement will be part of the July 17th meeting that the council has, so that they see that. Next month. With that being said, anything else regarding Cedar Canyon? We can move on to more.
No, I think it's going to be a little gem. I think it's going to be great. I'm excited about it.
Thank you.
Mr. Goodwin, let's move on to number number 19.
Oh, that's good. That's where I wanted to go. Accessory apartments. To date, we have, I think, two accessory apartments in the city. Just kidding, we have lots more, but those are the only ones that are registered. But what we're trying to do here is create a system that incentivizes people to come to the city and register their apartment. We want to make it easy for them. We want to take any stumbling block, any hurdle that they may have, and do what we can to remove that. And the reason that is that the state requires us to have a moderate income housing plan as part of the city's general plan. We don't have a moderate income housing plan. And currently, MAG, the Mountain Land Association of Government, they're actually working on our moderate income housing plan for us right now. So we are really appreciative of their efforts in that regard. But in order to get a sense of where we are for any sort of moderate income housing, we believe that it is, if there's any moderate income housing to be found in Cedar Hills, it's going to be in accessory apartments. Just given the nature of the home economy out in Northern California, we know it's going to be in accessory apartments. So what we've done is we've created this code. Our old accessory apartment code was occupancy shall be limited to 2 persons per bedroom with a maximum of 4 people. The resident must provide off-street parking for all occupants of the main building. That was the extent of it. And what we're trying to do is flush that out a little bit more, but also do it in a way that allows people to know what criteria we're going to be looking for from a zoning perspective as well as a building perspective. That Jenny Hay, who's not here right now, but will be presenting this tonight, has worked really hard on getting this put together for the planning commission as well as the council. And it goes over most of the issues that we face with accessory apartments, which are usually when they become a nuisance to neighbors. That's when we hear about them. It's when they park in the entirety of the cul-de-sac, they park up and down the street, they have loud parties, or one complaint we get occasionally is that my neighbors changed and I don't know who they are. And so you kind of have to sift through legitimate complaints and complaints that you really can't do anything about and say, what can we do about it? And so I think that this code that we're proposing really goes a long way in addressing those issues. So if we just go through my, again, item D, the appearance, it has to look like a single family home, it can't look like a duplex. Entrances, it has to have one entrance on the front, it can't have two entrances on the back, on the front, side, the front elevation. Homes that are in violation of this currently will be grandfathered in because we don't have any code that prevented them from doing it before. The address, we will require that for public safety purposes, that accessory apartments be identified as the same unit number but with a B, so that when an emergency situation happens, they call it and say, find that such and such B, and then public safety is then aware that that is an accessory apartment to look for an entrance on the back side of the building, on the side of the building.
So, can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
Like, at my house, I have an apartment. What I need to put, like, on my street where it's painted my, you know, my address on the street where it's painted, when I need to put A and B?
Possibly. It can also be identified with a mailbox on the home, or in your case, it's a little different where you can't see the home from the street, so
right.
It's a little but why is that
being on the street?
I know that's come up from our public safety personnel where they said that they have had instances where a call was made, they responded to the home, the owner of the home went to the front door and said, there's not an emergency here, not realizing it was in the basement apartment.
So we're trying to be aware, cognizant of those issues as they come up. Something that I feel is important is that the accessory apartment, the main building, be owner-occupied. Otherwise, it becomes a duplex. I feel like with rentals the way they are, most of the zoning problems that we have with unkept yards, parking issues, noise, are already on rental properties. So if we can have the owners there, then we're alleviating some of those concerns that we have in regards to rental properties. But there are some exceptions for owner-occupied rental properties. You can see those carved out there. We're not allowing separate utilities. The parking needs, there needs to be adequate parking off street. And then they would just register with the zoning department.
So I have a question on that. It says in item B, it says that the permit will be automatically renewed for the next year upon receipt of registration fees. What are the registration fees going to be, and what does that cover? What is the purpose of it?
The administrative side of setting them up. So they're going to be pretty nominal fees. We're talking about $25, $30.
Okay.
That's it.
To cover the administrative costs.
And probably never registration. I don't believe
it's
something we, it's a one-time fee right now.
Okay, because right now it says that they'll have to pay that every year.
I was talking to Jenny about that earlier, and we're not proposing a fee right now, but that language could be fleshed out a little bit more. But with the way that the code is changing with businesses, we used to do home-based rental units as home-based businesses. The way that the code changed the state 2 years ago now, we did away with that. So now those are no longer considered home-based businesses. So we're not going to treat them like home-based businesses. But we do want to know where our accessory apartments are. And that goes back to that, except that the general plan information that we'd like to collect is how many accessory apartments are there in the city.
So, Council, I recommend that during that approval, there's just an indication that that fee is a one-time set fee, not an annual fee.
I would suggest that one-time fee not run with the land.
Oh, go with the owner.
Go with the owner. Once the owners change it, they have to go register.
Yeah, we do say that it's null and void on the sale of the home, so
There's a section here that talks about, so it has to be owner occupied except if there's arrears or lesser activities such as temporary job assignments, that holds volunteer service. And then there's the other one where the owner is placed in a hospital against the home assisted living facility or similar facility. Or begin with a deadline of that, like 5 years, maybe put that in a trust or whatever needs to happen there that can manage. Because what you'll have in that situation is that, you know, who's going to be the top for the main portion of the home and run through it together.
You could do that. You could also state that it needs to be occupied by the family member.
Okay.
I think it's probably easier way to go, because then you can go back to the family and it's, it doesn't extend out to cousins, but it's moms, dads, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, in-laws, that sort of. So it's kind of narrows the sphere of people that can live there. So if they rent it out to somebody else, because it's moms and nursing home,
right,
then there's a certain way to continue to rent that home, or else it's got to be one family rent.
Okay.
So we're not saying you can't rent your home out at that point. You just can't rent it out to two families.
Yeah. Top or bottom, right? I mean, the immediate family member
from
the bottom,
even we're not getting into which side they occupy the owner.
Mm-hmm.
This
part I don't really care about that much. But just to get all our there. So we can maybe add language there.
And then it depends on what that one area needs is something to account for that situation.
I'm curious on like L, it says that they have to have a minimum of 2 off-street parking spaces. On the apartments that I've seen in the city, I'm guessing there aren't any who meet that requirement. We'll see how
many. You'd be surprised, because you have your 2 garage DC parking stalls that are required for the main dwelling. And then the driveway is usually 20 feet wide and 10 feet long.
Yeah. The spots in front of the garage door.
It's not convenient for the owners, but it's.
But they can have that.
They can't have that. Okay. The idea is just to get the cars off the street, have them somewhere to park, during, especially during the winter months when we use snow.
Okay.
So that driveway needs that clearance.
So, I was curious about that as well. Parking in the street by tenants in an accessory apartment. Is prohibited. I think that's problematic because it's.
Where are you? Which section?
The very middle, the first line. It's not prohibited for the owner or occupant to park on the street.
And then,
open for 48 hours.
We need to add in periods greater than 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which would then agree with the rest of the code.
Yep.
Council, any other thoughts or comments on the accessory apartments? Or to be proposed?
Chandler, while we're talking about this, one thing came to my attention a short time ago was that owner occupancy can be limited if. When you legally organize a family trust or a trust is owning the property, that precludes the owner occupancy. So anybody with a their home being in a trust would not meet the requirement to be an accessory apartment.
Would it have to be a name of somebody on the trust that would be living there? As part of the trust?
I'm not real familiar with how the trusts work, other than
so,
it did come to my attention
my
in another
jurisdiction. Of our trust. So
it would seem that parties that are privy to the trust would then still have to be all of it on site, so to speak. And that's a good point, and I think that's something that we can look into.
I was reading the language here, it says that. As on the record, the county tax assessment rolls, and that would not include trusts, because that would be under a trustee.
We add that.
I'm gonna make a note to how to address trusts.
So we brought up a lot of things. Do we, can we still vote on this?
Not during work session, but during,
during regular session.
It can be considered part of your motion, yes.
So we just add the changes we talked about in work session. Okay.
Or I can spell those out maybe.
I've got a list of them, so I can go over them.
Yes, you should do it.
Such an walk-in earlier.
Thanks for the team.
So when somebody's going to register, we've talked about this, that they're not going to be paying impact fees. We kind of did a quick survey around the valley of which cities require accessory apartments to pay impact fees, and here we're kind of the outliers, so change that part of the impact fees. Then, according to state code, we're limited in what we can, I printed off what I thought that would we are limited in what we can require as far as building modifications to comply with building. There are certain things that we can require, and there are certain things that we can't require. But they're very simple things. It's just smoke detectors, it's GFI wiring of kitchens, it's street dressing. Windows need to be made for second forms of egress. Electrical systems or plumbing systems that they're found to be unsafe. Hand or guardrails. And then occupancy separation doors. So they'd be fire rated. So there's certain things that we can require. And those would be, I think, just to make sure that we're approving accessory apartments that the basic building code, we require those. We'll be working with the building code and building department to establish that. So what we want to do is we want to have a packet that somebody can download online and off and just get, they know every zoning requirement, they know every building requirement, they know every fee. It's just a separate process. We want to streamline this so people know how to do it.
Council, we have about 13 minutes before our council meeting, so have a little bit of a break. I want to take a motion to adjourn the work session.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Motion was made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
A second.
Seconded by Councilmember Miller. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we adjourn.